that, you know, they are very, very worried about things that went on in the Obama years and that they don't want people to know, and start digging deep into all of that, because it is completely irrational and it's driving them mad. Did you see Ted Cruz, by the way, going for CNN? I mean, another example. I mean, you know, and Ted Cruz, by the way, could one day be a Supreme Court pick. I mean, he's also a pretty formidable lawyer.
He was nominated. I mean, he was on the short list, but it wasn't going to be his turn. I think it's better that he remains
absolutely.
Texas for the time being.
Trump needs him in the Senate, no question about it. But I mean, you know, in time, if things ever do stabilize.
I'm saying hi to everyone. We're just talking, guys, but keep on going, Alexander. We're just talking about all the news of the day,
exactly, which is what we do, by the way. But all I was saying is, I mean, if things ever do settle down, then I think Ted Cruz could make an outstanding Supreme Court justice. I mean, as a lawyer, as a jurist, he's outstanding. And I believe Scalia thought very highly of him also.
Yeah. I was watching the press briefing with Kayleigh McEnany. I mean, she is, I don't know how she does it. Mm. I mean, it was just an onslaught of crazed journalists just digging into this white supremacy Proud Boys thing. I mean, they just would not stop. And she's reading off statement after statement of all the times Trump has denounced white supremacy, KKK, racism. Oh, no. I mean, just everything across the board. Yeah. I mean, across the board. And she's reading statement after statement, day after day, that he's renounced it and he's denounced it and he's contacted the FBI to put these groups on a watch list and to indict these groups and all these things and they would not stop.
No, I know.
I mean, it gave me such a headache watching it, and I sat there and I said, no. I was just thinking to myself, after researching all this stuff about Hillary Clinton and Brennan and Comey and Gina Haspel and all the stuff that they were doing, and then listening to these journalists, the swamp is so deep, so big, so extensive, so obsessed. Mm. Even to this day, after all the news that we've covered, Alexander, I still cannot believe my eyes. I can't believe what's happening to the United States. I cannot believe that these people are journalists.
Oh, no.
They're not. They really are obsessed. I mean, they really have psychological and mental problems, and their hatred towards Trump, towards Trump is eating away at their very existence. I mean, I've disliked presidents. God knows I don't like Biden. I never liked Obama. I hated the wars they got the US into, and they got the world into. I dislike, you know, their foreign policy and all the suffering that they caused, but the hate that they have for Trump is like, it's in their bones, in their blood, in every cell of their body. And you ask yourself, why? Have you met the guy? Have you sat down and had a drink with him? Have you talked with him? Did the guy do something to you when you were in school with the man? It's beyond comprehension. It's beyond comprehension. And I mean, I don't know what to say. They support a system, and I'll shut up and let you go, Alexander. And I want to say hi to everybody, but it's just so frustrating. They support a system and they support an establishment that when I was growing up and when I was going to university, I saw that establishment. I saw the Clinton White House bomb the crap out of Serbia, an Orthodox Christian country, bomb the hell out of them for 74 nights. Bomb them indiscriminately, bomb them. I saw them tear apart Iraq over a lie, and that was Bush. That was a Republican. I saw them tear apart Iraq over a stupid lie. I saw them tear apart Syria and go after Assad like I've never seen them go after any world leader like Assad. I saw them destroy Libya. I saw them assassinate Gaddafi before our eyes in a video. Gaddafi. I saw them destroy Ukraine
in the cruelest way.
And these are the people they support. These are the people that the press are sitting there and they're calling Trump a racist. You're calling Trump a racist after all the suffering and war and and killing that you've propped up for the past 20 years. It's it's unbelievable.
Absolutely true. Completely right. I agree with you. You said it brilliantly, and I agree with every word you've just said. I entirely agree with you. I mean, I've never known anything as demented as this. My memory of US politics goes back to the Nixon years. I mean, I can remember the battles around Richard Nixon. And I'm like yourself, I've lived through many presidencies. I've lived through many British prime ministers. I've lived through many Greek prime ministers. There's some I've disliked, there's some I've opposed. As is well known to people who know me, I mean, I even had to experience a period of exile from my country because of, the Greek dictatorship that came to power in Greece, which did some pretty gruesome things. I've never felt the kind of anger and the sense of, vengeance and loathing that these people have for Trump against any of these other people, not even the Greek dictatorship. I mean, people, who drove me out of my house, sent my parents into exile, kept me in custody for a time as a child. I've never felt that kind of anger towards them. I've never felt anger towards anyone. There have been prime ministers in Britain I've absolutely detested. Tony Blair springs to mind. All the things you said about the establishment in the US, I could say about Tony Blair too. And he brought to it all a kind of awful, hideous, moralistic religiosity and sanctimoniousness, which absolutely revolted me. But I never felt towards him the kind of crazy, passion that these people have. And I just don't understand why. Same for you, same as you. I mean, what has Trump actually done to any of these people that merits this sort of hatred? And, on the racism thing, I mean, I've spoken to people and he has his business in New York and elsewhere, a construction business. He employs many people, the many, many groups and, minorities. There's never been an issue. Apparently he treats them all fine. Notice none of those people has ever come forward and have said, Trump was a bad employer. We were discriminated at work. He was, any of those things. All those long years when he ran his business, ran his company, all of those things, that's never arisen until now. Now it's arisen. And it's become a sort of weapon that they use. They don't want to talk about the serious things that happened. We'll come to those in a moment. But they do talk about this thing, which is just a fantasy.
It's crazy. I grew up in New York and I was a kid and I remember my neighborhood. I mean, we were from everywhere, man. I mean, it was cool. We were from everywhere, literally. And we all got along. I never thought that the U.S. would go down this route where they would hate their own country so much and think their country is such a racist place when it's not. I've lived most of my life in the United States and I've been East Coast and West Coast. Yeah. And I mean, everyone is really cool. Mm. I mean, just really cool people. Mm. And they don't have any hangups about this stuff.
No.
Yeah. Do you have people on the fringes? Of course you have it in Greece. Yeah. You have it in Cyprus, which is a tiny little island. You have people on the fringes everywhere. This is life.
I know. Absolutely.
That's how life is. That's how the world is when you travel to any country.
I know.
But the U.S., out of all the countries I've lived in, I've been to, the U.S. was cool. And I grew up there. I went to university there. And everyone got along fine.
And Americans, with good cause, were so proud of their country. So proud of it. And as you rightly said, now so many of them talk and act as if they hate it. I mean, it's most strange. It's very bizarre. I mean, I've never seen that. Anything like that before. I mean, obviously, you always used to get a few people in the US who hated the US, but you could count them on your fingers. Now, vast blocks of people seem to hate their own country in this extraordinary way. Again, I don't understand it. I really don't understand it at all. I mean, it seems very strange.
It's going to be bad. I mean, I hate to say it, but it's when you hate the place you're from, when you hate your country, when you hate, where you hate the place you were born, where you hate your people, karma is, God, karma, I'll say it as an Orthodox, God, other people may call it karma. It's not going to end well
No.
when you hate your land, your neighborhood, your country, your very existence. It's not going to end well.
I completely agree with that. I entirely agree. I mean, I think this is a terrible thing. And anyway, let's
hello everybody. Thank you for joining us. We apologize for the rant. It has been an incredible news cycle, and we thank you all for joining us and taking an hour or more of your time to listen to us deliver the news to you. We have a really great show, a lot of stuff that we need to unpack, and Spartan Warrior Queen, as always, thank you very much for everything you do, and thank you to everyone who's joining us on this live stream and your comments. And your emails and your super chats and your regular chats and everything. We know that we have everyone from all over the world. We did a live stream yesterday, and everyone that's in Australia and the UK and in Hungary and in the US and Mexico and Sweden and Serbia and Slovakia, everywhere, Amsterdam, France, South Africa. Big up to South Africa. You know, we don't report enough about South Africa.
But, no, we don't.
You know, you guys are on our mind. And we will get to it, guys. And Alexander, we have the Oracle of London with us. The smart, the talented Oracle of London, Alexander Mercuris. And Alexander, I know that you have been working very, very hard. Yes, Armenia as well. Everyone in Armenia. You've been working very hard unpacking, you know, this news about I've written four bullet points here, and it's not just about Hillary. It's news, and you're going to unpack it for us, and you're going to talk about it. It's news about Hillary Clinton. It's news about John Brennan, former CIA director John Brennan.
Mm-hmm.
It's news about James Comey, and it's news about Gina Haspel, who is the current CIA director, but the former CIA director in the UK, if I'm not mistaken, at the time. When all of these shenanigans were going on. And of course, we don't need to mention Obama and Biden, who were also sitting at the top of this. But Alexander, I don't know how you want to approach this, because there's a lot of different intersecting stories and narratives going on, but I think they all lead to the same place. And I think the dots are now getting connected. They're getting very well connected, it seems. So Alexander, the floor is yours.
Well, I mean, all the roads lead in one direction, which is to the Obama White House. Some of them lead via Hillary Clinton. Now, we were hearing over the last couple of days, about a week, in fact, that there was a sort of a long drum roll that there was going to be a big document that was going to be revealed. And we were all wondering what it would be. And it came in the form of this letter from Radcliffe, who is now the director of National Intelligence, the man who sits in the chair which James Clapper once sat in. And what he has revealed is really quite extraordinary, which is that it seems that US intelligence in some way found out that Russian intelligence had concluded that the whole Russiagate scandal was authorized, was in fact decided upon by Hillary Clinton on the 26th of July, 2016. In other words, that the Russians worked out that the Russiagate scandal was a hoax, and that in fact, Hillary Clinton had actually authorized it in order, it seems, to distract attention away from the revelations about the emails that were going to be pouring out. WikiLeaks was going to publish about what the DNC had been up to. Now, that is actually, when you take a step back and think about it, very remarkable. It's very, very extraordinary in itself. First of all, how did the Russians find this out? How do they know to the exact day which, you know, what Hillary Clinton was up to? And secondly, how did the US intelligence community find out from the Russians about this? I mean, you know, maybe, possibly, the Russians have spies in, you know, the DNC. Unquestionably, the US has spies within Russian intelligence. But this is pretty big information, very, you would have thought, sensitive information. There's some suggestions that Russian intelligence was passing the story around, and various Russian agents were talking to each other about it, and that US intelligence picked up the chatter. I find that very difficult to believe, by the way, because I would have thought this was such a sensitive issue that if Russian intelligence did pick up this kind of information, they would have kept it very, very much under wraps. And a few important people in the Kremlin would have been briefed. But I certainly don't think it would have been the subject of chatter. I mean, one thing the Russians do know how to do is keep their secrets. So I'm not saying that, you know, they aren't penetrated at some levels. But that does seem very remarkable, actually. The other question is, why did the US intelligence take this information seriously? Because they did. We know that they did, because Brennan, who was the CIA director, came and briefed Obama about it. And in fact, he's provided handwritten records. They found handwritten records, which confirm the fact. Notice Brennan has never mentioned this. Obama has never mentioned this. This has never been disclosed. It's never been disclosed, apparently, to Congress. You know, we've been very critical of Senate Republicans, especially, for sitting on information about Russiagate. But it seems they generally didn't know about this one. So we have a very interesting chain of information here. Russians apparently getting information about Hillary Clinton, which US intelligence found out about and thought was sufficiently credible that they reported on it to Obama. I mean, that is extraordinary. Now, what I'm going to say now are pure guesses, and I'm going to say that straight away. I think there are some guesses that one can make. Firstly, how credible is this information? On the face of it, it is completely credible. I mean, there was a lot of speculation at the time that, you know, Hillary Clinton and the Democrats were trying to divert attention away from WikiLeaks revelations by stirring up Russiagate. If you go back to some of the very early reporting we did on the Duran, when we were still a website, I mean, we published that speculation. We didn't know that Hillary Clinton decided that herself and gave instructions to that effect on the 26th of July. I mean, the only way of finding that out, as the Russians supposedly did, is if there'd been a leak somewhere. Now, how did they get that information? I'm going to make a guess, and this I want to make very clear is purely a guess. There have been some revelations recently that this man Danchenko, Igor Danchenko, who is Christopher Steele's primary subsource, was in touch with the Russian embassy and had spoken to Russian officials, and that there's been some discussion that, you know, the US had mounted a counterintelligence operation on him. I wonder whether in all the interactions he had with Steele and which Steele had with Glenn Simpson of Fusion GPS, the word came down that the boss, i.e. Hillary Clinton, had given this instruction, went through Glenn Simpson to Steele, went from Steele to Danchenko, and Danchenko came and talked about it to the Russians. It's possible. Possible. I'm not saying it's true. It's just possible. Another possibility. How did the US find out? How did US intelligence find out about the fact that Russian intelligence knew all about this? Well, again, there is a possibility, it seems to me, that this mole, this agent that we now know the Russian, US intelligence community was running within the Russian presidential administration, the man who was, you know, exfiltrated and is now in the US, that maybe he got this information and passed it on to the US. He's a CIA agent. And note, Brennan was the person who briefed Obama. And Brennan is, of course, the director of the CIA. So it wasn't Clapper. It was Brennan who briefed Obama about this. Again, it's a guess, pure guess. We do know, we've long known, that in August 2016, Brennan sent a sealed document full of information to Obama. I think we desperately need to know what was in that sealed document, and that this was the first briefing that Obama got about, you know, Russiagate. And I do wonder whether Brennan's briefing to Obama that we've known about is the same briefing at which Brennan told Obama that, you know, this may be Hillary Clinton cooking up this story. We do need to find that out. There is another possibility, which, I float it. I don't know whether or not it's true. Intelligence agencies of great powers regularly communicate with each other. They do so all the time. In 2016, it's known that Russian intelligence and US intelligence were communicating very, very closely about Syria. The Russians had gone into Syria the previous year. There was considerable crisis in Syria at that time. There was Aleppo, which is Syria's biggest city, was under siege, and the Russians were working towards breaking that siege. There was intense diplomatic exchanges between the then Secretary of State, John Kerry, and Lavrov, who was the Russian foreign minister. There was an important meeting between Putin and Obama at the G20 summit, which was apparently a very difficult meeting, but which was primarily about Syria, in which the Russians, which Obama spoke to the Russians, to Putin, apparently about Russiagate also. So there were intense interactions at that time at the very highest level between Russian and US governments and between the Russian and US intelligence communities. And I wonder whether, as part of those interactions, the Russians may have briefed US intelligence. They may have said to them, look, do be aware that Hillary Clinton wants to escalate the situation in Syria, and she's going to blame us for her problems with the emails that have been leaked from the DNC. That might explain how this information got to the US. So these are theories. I'm not pretending I'm based on any kind of knowledge. Radcliffe is going to give a classified briefing to Congress, but note that Radcliffe has said this is not Russian disinformation.
A chance that it may be Ukrainian? Danchenko. Danchenko is a...
It's a Ukrainian name. Yeah. It's possible. It's possible.
Biden and crew, Obama, Biden and crew go into Ukraine. They start doing business in Ukraine. Mm. Hillary Clinton starts doing business in Ukraine. Mm. They have a lot of contacts in that country. Mm. Maybe it's the most logical place to start a disinformation campaign. The Russians intercept because they've got Ukraine wired as well from top to bottom.
Oh, thank you. Absolutely.
They intercept this Danchenko guy's communications and what he's up to, and they pass it on to the U.S. Is that a possibility, or maybe something else that I'm not looking at?
That's a perfectly plausible possibility. I mean, you're quite right. The Russians know everything that goes in Ukraine. I mean, I've actually heard Putin use those precise words. He once gave an interview to a U.S. I think it was a U.S. TV channel, in which he said, when it comes to Ukraine, we know everything. We know who meets whom. We know what wire transfers happen. We know what money passes around. We know what conversations we take place. It was a very strange comment from Putin at the time. This happened, by the way, now that you mention it. I remember now, in late 2016, during the transition period. And I remember that it sounded to me, actually, like a kind of threat. I mean, sort of telling people in the US, look, whatever you've been up to in Ukraine, we know all about it. We know everything. Those are his words. He actually said that. When it comes to Ukraine, we know everything. And, you know, it was both perhaps a warning and a threat, too. Who knows? I mean, that the US and Russia talk to each other at many levels all the time, even when their relations are extremely bad, as they are, you know, now, is no doubt unquestionably the truth. Russian and US intelligence are in constant dialogue with each other. Russian and US officials meet regularly, and they exchange ideas and information. I remember when I was going through the embassy cables that WikiLeaks published many years ago. I remember actually reading cables that U.S. embassies were sending back to Washington about how, you know, CIA field agents would meet their opposite numbers from Russian intelligence and would exchange information, and how this would be reported back to Washington. So, you know, this goes on all the time. So it's quite possible that the Russians found out about this and tipped the US off in some way. But, you know, that's all very interesting stuff. I mean, it's all spy versus spy stuff. The most important thing is that the US treated this information as credible. So credible that Brennan felt he had to brief Obama about it, and so credible that to this day Radcliffe insists it's not disinformation.
Yes, and we will move on to Brennan now, but so yeah. Credible, Alexander, so credible and so damaging to Hillary Clinton that Brennan felt it was his obligation and his duty to suppress any information that connected Hillary Clinton to Russia and elevate any information he had, false information, i.e. the Steele dossier, about Trump and Russia. John Brennan politicized all his reports to Congress and to the Senate, politicized them, and flat out lied about what was going on in order to hurt Trump and to help Hillary Clinton. He meddled in the elections, plain and simple. This is now fact. And Obama knew what was going on. He said nothing.
He did. Now, can I just say, Brennan, in my opinion, you know, so much of the focus over the last 2 years has been on the FBI. We haven't got to the other side, which is the CIA, because I think the CIA was involved at least as much as the FBI was. And Brennan has always struck me as a much more, if you like, impressive individual than Comey. And I suspect that it was actually that I've always suspected that Brennan is probably, you know, within the intelligence community, the single most important figure in putting Russiagate together. I said he was the person who gave this extraordinary briefing to Obama in August 2016, based upon the information supposedly provided by this this agent the CIA was running in the presidential administration, the Russian presidential administration in Moscow. Brennan is the person who often has spoken on TV shows talking about, you know, the fact that Russiagate is credible. And what we now know is that Brennan was getting, as CIA director, information from his sources and analysis from his analysts, which could contradicted the whole theory of Russiagate. Firstly, we've just had this evidence that we've just been hearing about, in which apparently Russian intelligence was saying that Hillary Clinton had ordered the construction, the fabrication of Russiagate on the 26th of July, 2016. And Brennan knew about that because it was the CIA who obviously got this information, and it was Brennan who briefed Obama about it. So he knew about that, but it's not in any public document that the CIA ever published. I mean, the CIA was involved in publishing an intelligence document in October 2016, in the run-up to the election, talking about, you know, Russian interference in the election, and saying, you know, quite openly, I mean, didn't quite say, but it was not difficult to read that it was this work was being done to assist Hillary Clinton, to assist Donald Trump, but that's not what that document said. And of course, he was also, it was Brennan who apparently played the key role in putting together that disastrous intelligence community assessment that was published in January 2017, which basically said that the Russians had put together the whole, you know, Russiagate conspiracy in order to get Donald Trump elected. So Brennan plays a key role in this. So he was ignoring what presumably his field agents were telling him about the information coming out from Russia, that the Russians thought that it was Hillary Clinton that put it all together. But he was also ignoring what his CIA analysts were telling him, that at least some of them were telling him, which is that the Russians wanted Hillary Clinton to win. Because from their point of view, from the Russian point of view, Donald Trump was an unknown quantity. They didn't know what to make of him. They were very uncertain about him. And they were very nervous about his talk of beefing up and strengthening the US military. So the Russians did not have any great confidence in Donald Trump as a potential partner or president. But they considered Hillary Clinton a known quantity. They'd worked with her when she was Secretary of State, and they'd had connections and relationships with the Clintons going all the way back to a visit Bill Clinton made to Moscow in 1968 when he was a student and Rhodes Scholar in Britain. So they had a long history with the Clintons. Trump was completely unknown to them. They didn't trust him. They weren't sure what to make of him. So on balance, the predominant, prevailing view in Moscow was better stick with the Clintons than with Donald Trump. Go with Donald Trump, especially since they assumed that Hillary Clinton was going to win anyway. Now, I want to say this.
Can I just say something real quick, Alexander, to your point, real quick? Can't you also make the argument that the Russians knew, and every country knew, that the Clintons could be bought? Yeah. And the Russians did. They owned the Clintons. Yeah. They owned Bill Clinton's when he gave his $500,000 speech at Alpha Bank. Yeah. They owned Hillary Clinton via Uranium One. I mean, but this is geopolitics. And this is geopolitik.
Oh yeah.
If you're the Kremlin, you're sitting there and you're saying, I don't know this guy Trump. He already has money. So obviously, I don't even know if we could buy him off. I don't even know if he would go for that. Yeah. And he's also talking a very America first game. He seems genuine. We don't want this guy. Exactly. Now these Clintons with this Clinton Foundation and this money laundering scheme they have and the history that we have paying them off.
Well, I know.
She's perfect.
You've got leverage over them. I mean, that's the absolute thing. I mean, you know, the Russians who are, you know, to be very clear, I mean, you know, we said lots of things about Russia, but the Russians are pretty ruthless when it comes to their pursuing, you know, their own interests. I mean, you know, we all know this famous word that we hear about in, you know, Russian, in spy thrillers, kompromat. And it exists. The Russians do it. I mean, there's no question about it. I'm sure they got stacks of blackmail material about the Clintons. I mean, not to put too fine a point on it. Masses. I mean, you know, probably whole, you know, vaults full of it. I mean, it wouldn't be difficult. I mean, bear in mind, you know, that famous joke that Trump made, you know, about, well, you know, do they have all those 30,000 deleted emails? I'm sure the Russians do have all those 30,000 deleted emails. I'm sure they got it all. I'm sure they got everything. I'm sure they know everything there is to know about Hillary and Bill Clinton. So, you know, they got heaps of compromise on those two. And you're perfectly right. They have nothing on Donald Trump whatsoever. I mean, we've talked about this. Donald Trump's entire interactions with Russia, he attended a Miss Universe contest, met some Russian rock singers, the Uglarovs or whatever they were called. Well, that, you know, doesn't take you very far. there was some talk about building a hotel in Moscow, but Trump himself, we discussed all of this. Trump himself wasn't really involved. It was more Michael Cohen's idea. I mean, this is what's so strange about all of that. I mean, you need to go back to our earlier videos in which we discussed all of this and explain what a complete non-story the Moscow hotel is. So nothing there. All you've got that the Russians might have compromat over Trump was that ludicrous story that Christopher Steele and his subsource cooked up about what happened in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. Only it didn't happen. It isn't true. It's complete nonsense from start to finish. So they got nothing on Trump. He's not bribable. He's not corruptible. We know the fact that the Russians have never bribed or corrupted him. Well, of course, with the Clintons, we know otherwise. So, they got all the compromat that you can imagine, and they got all the facts about bribeable, corruptible, easily influence people in some ways. They actually are. So, it's entirely logical. Can I just also say about this? I mean, I said this on previous programs. I'm going to say very quickly. I mean, I was in St. Petersburg. I think it was in June 2016. And I didn't talk to these people. I mean, I don't talk to top Russian officials, but I attended the venues where they were talking. And they were talking quite openly that they expected Hillary Clinton to win. And they looked forward to working with her. And I remember Putin himself saying this. He said that he got on very well with Bill Clinton when Bill Clinton was president. He'd worked perfectly well with Hillary Clinton. He knew all these things that Hillary Clinton was saying, but that his experience told him that people say all sorts of things on campaign in order to get elected, but they doesn't follow that they're going to behave like that when they become president. I remember him saying that. And all right, that's me, but a much more closely involved with Russia, but very reputable and objective journalist, Dmitry Trenin, who is Russian born and is based in the United States, says that his sources in Moscow, and he's got sources in Moscow. I don't have sources in Moscow. Trenin has sources in Moscow at the time, were telling him the same thing, that the Russians preferred Hillary Clinton because she was a known quantity and they knew they could work with her. They might have known they could work with her because, they considered her a realist. They might have known they could work with her because, well, let's face it, there might have been other reasons. But anyway, whatever. The fact was, they preferred Hillary Clinton to Barack Obama. They didn't like or trust Obama at all. They found him arrogant, aloof, duplicitous, lots of things. And given the choice between Obama and Hillary Clinton, they preferred Hillary Clinton. And Donald Trump didn't even enter the picture as far as they were concerned. So that's a little bit of going off a bit on the tack, on another tack. But, it is consistent with what I was hearing at the time. It's clearly consistent with what Dmitry Trenin was hearing from his sources at the time. It makes complete sense. It makes total and absolute sense. And we know, coming back to what we're talking about today, that is what some of the CIA's top analysts were telling Brennan. Only what does Brennan do? Does he discuss it? Does he report it to Obama? Possibly not. Does he report it to Congress? Absolutely not. What he does instead is he suppresses it. He keeps it out of all of the reports. He keeps it out of that disastrous intelligence community assessment. So Brennan is guilty of suppressing contrary views and information, because this information, by the way, these views don't even appear, as they should have done, in appendices or subparagraphs. You could set, for example, in the intelligence community assessment, most of our analysts think that the Russians are backing Donald Trump. But some of them think Hillary, they were backing Hillary Clinton or preferred Hillary Clinton to win. And then you could have an appendix to put all of that information and you could respond to it. That might have not have been, you might not have agreed with that, but it would have been an appropriate thing to do. Brennan didn't do that. He just suppressed the evidence. He concealed it. He concealed it from Congress because it's clear Congress didn't know about it. He definitely concealed it from the American people. We're only starting to find out about it now, 4 years later, in the run-up to another election. He may have concealed it from the president, Barack Obama, though, to be frank, I don't think so. I think you're going to find that Barack Obama was briefed about everything.
He concealed it from the American people. Didn't the American people have a right to know this information, especially heading into an election? If you're going to say that stuff about Trump, then you're going to also have to say that stuff about Hillary Clinton. If you have this information, the Steele dossier, but you have the same type of information, more credible information about Hillary Clinton, you should also relay that to the American people as well. The American people had a right to know, especially given the 3-4 year Mueller investigation and all that crap that we went through. And not even that, people have gone to prison. I mean, Julian Assange is still sitting in prison in the UK. You have Roger Stone, you have Michael Flynn, you have George Papadopoulos, you have Carter Page, you have Paul Manafort. All of this stuff could have been avoided if Brennan had just said, look, guys, like you said, because I have this Steele dossier, which says this, and I have this Russian intelligence stuff, which says this about Hillary Clinton. You know, take it as you want, report it as you want. This is the situation. These are the facts. This is what I have. He could have done that. And the American The American people then could have made up their mind how they saw the information. And not only that, you also have all this censorship and every all this bad stuff that has happened traces back to this nonsense that John Brennan cooked up.
Absolutely correct. This is entirely right. I mean, one way of approaching this would have been to say nothing. I mean, you know, intelligence is ultimately intended to be provided to one person, who is the president. You could have briefed the president. You could have said, we're getting all this conflicting information from all these different sources and kept it there. Or you could have told the American people, with the permission of the president, obviously, we're getting all this information. You know, some information points this way, some information points that way. What Brennan did was he published that information, which pointed this way, Russians interfering on behalf of Hillary Clinton, and he suppressed from the American people the information that pointed that way. Russians prefer Hillary Clinton to win. I mean, this is what he did. He played a partisan game during an election. He tried to shape perception. He tried to use intelligence, and he cherry-picked that intelligence to construct a narrative that would help Hillary Clinton and damage Donald Trump and do so in the run-up to an election. Now, I have to make a point here. We've just spoke a few minutes ago about this instruction that Hillary Clinton gave to construct Russiagate, which was apparently given on the 26th of July. And what I forgot to mention, by the way, when we talked about that, is that if you look at the timeline of around that time, that works. That makes complete sense. I mean, it makes complete sense that Hillary Clinton might have made that decision on that particular day. Now, Hillary Clinton makes that decision. A few weeks later, in August, certainly, perhaps earlier, perhaps at the same time, Brennan suppresses information that the Russians might have preferred Hillary Clinton to win, and instead publishes and tells the American people the Russians prefer Donald Trump and are working to get Donald Trump elected. Are you telling me those two things are not connected with each other? Hillary Clinton making that decision on the 26th of July, Brennan behaving as he did in July and August. If you tell me that Hillary Clinton decided to do one thing in July and Brennan decided to do essentially the same complementary thing in August, and these two people were not in some way in communication with each other, then I have a bridge to sell you, because I don't believe that that kind of coincidence is remotely possible. Brennan, Hillary Clinton, through their teams, perhaps directly, were coordinating with each other. They must have been. And I don't believe for a moment that Barack Obama wasn't in the know.
And I'll take it a step further, Alexander, to what you said. They were also coordinating with the mainstream media, because I believe a week or two afterwards, and this is documented as well, a week or two afterwards, Robbie Mook had an interview with Jake Tapper, and he floated this Trump-Russia cooperation thing, collusion thing. And that was the first time that we heard about it from Robbie Mook, who was Hillary Clinton's campaign manager or managing her communications. Yeah. So he got it into CNN around the same time, and that's on video. We have that interview as well. It was around the same time that Brennan started leaking all this out. So I think it shows Clinton, Brennan, and mainstream media all working together.
Absolutely. All the players are singing from the same hymn, tune, the same tune at the same time. Chance? Well, I don't believe that. I mean, that doesn't make any kind of sense. This was coordinated. It must have been. There is no other explanation possible. No other explanation is credible. And that is an extremely serious thing. It means that Hillary Clinton and the Democrats were able to influence what the CIA was doing at that time. Or perhaps it was the other way around. Maybe the CIA was influencing the Democrats and Hillary Clinton. But whatever it was, they were all working together to work towards one aim, which is to prevent Donald Trump being elected president of the United States.
All right. And the FBI, James Comey, where do they fit in now? Let's get into Comey.
Our favorite individual. I don't know how many of our viewers went through the ordeal of listening to his latest testimony, to Lindsey Graham's committee. But if ever there was an evasive character, an absolute snake in the grass, but Comey fits that bill completely. And by the way, here I have to criticize Donald Trump. A whole troop of people came along when he became president and told him that, Comey's not to be trusted. You should sack him at once. Christie told him, Giuliani told him, even Jeff Sessions told him that, this is an utterly treacherous terrible person. And here we see it. We saw it again with Lindsey Graham. I don't remember, doesn't ring a bell, can't recall, all these terrible things were happening. But there's no real explanation for it, because I have no real explanation for it, because I can't assume that this, I can't explain it, I can't remember it. And the whole thing is bizarre. It's Comey again, comes along informally dressed. In itself, I thought, actually, barely insult, frankly insulting towards the fact that, he's giving evidence to the Senate, to a committee of the Senate. And at the same time, he evades, he lies. He says that he continues to insist that FBI was not carrying out surveillance of Donald Trump during the election, when we actually know that the FBI used a briefing in August 2016 to carry out a surveillance on Trump. So he lies about that. He accepts that, all sorts of bad things were done, and it was all dysfunctional and lots of things went wrong, but it was all because we were so relaxed about these things and we weren't really following procedures properly. And yes, mistakes were made, and those mistakes were on my watch. And of course, I take responsibility for it. But in fact, he doesn't take any real responsibility for anything. And he now says that he wouldn't have signed off on those Pfizer warrants if he had known, you know, all those Pfizer warrants on Carter Page, if he had known what he knows now. It was his business to know then what he knows now. That's his job. That was his job as FBI director. But this is what was so extraordinary for me, was that he says, he still says that, you know, it wasn't his job to know about these things, which is in a way, again, saying he's not responsible. Now, we've talked about the FBI at phenomenal and extraordinary length. This is because the FBI comes directly under the Department of Justice, and it's by definition more easy to access what it was doing, because there were voices within the Department of Justice which were very unhappy, clearly, with the kind of things that Comey was up to. So, you know, in a way, I suspect this has distorted our understanding of events, because it makes the FBI look more important in Russiagate and the CIA less important in Russiagate than was probably actually the case. I still have always thought the CIA may very well have been the lead agency. But regardless of that, I mean, Comey put on a disastrous display, and it's quite clear that he still has this tremendous prejudice and animus against Donald Trump, and that he isn't sorry for anything. I mean, there wasn't any real sign of apology or contrition from him for anything that was done. No real sorrow for people like Carter Page, none at all for anyone else. You mentioned all these names, you know, George Papadopoulos, Michael Flynn, you know, they can all look to Comey. They won't see the slightest sign of regret from him for what his agency under his leadership did to them. And it's quite unbelievable.
Under the orders of Obama, though, we know that as well.
Well, this is where I think the dynamic is very interesting, because Obama seems to have been giving orders directly to Comey. But he was liaising with Brennan. Brennan was briefing Obama, and Obama was passing down instructions to Comey. That seems to have been the dynamic. So that shows, to my mind, that Brennan was ultimately the more important of the two. It was Brennan who was advising Obama, and then Obama was taking the information Brennan was giving him in order to get Comey to do the kind of things Obama wanted Comey and the FBI to do. So that's, if you like, the sort of line. And it shows that ultimately it was Brennan, more than Comey, who was the more influential man. Comey comes across as a slippery, devious character. It now turns out even Loretta Lynch didn't like him. It doesn't surprise me. But, you know, everybody apparently by this point was extremely mistrustful of Comey. But nonetheless, he was prepared to do the things that he was ordered to do, especially in that extraordinary meeting with Obama and Biden that took place in the White House on the 5th of January, 2017.
Yeah, but didn't Obama also pass an executive order or a law that made it easier for the agencies to share information as well, to share intelligence interagency? So Obama was greasing the wheels to make sure that the FBI, the CIA, and all these agencies were able to share their intelligence across the board.
Obama was not only doing that, but of course, without that happening, it's very difficult to see how this could have happened in the way that he did. Now, understand this: when Obama says, when he passes an executive order like this, which allows the various intel agencies to share information and pass information to each other, what that does is that it puts the White House and the president one step out of the picture. It means that he can plausibly deny that it was him who got this information to the FBI. He can say it was the CIA that did it. That's what he did, because what it means is that instead of having to get their information from the central place from the National Security Council, which is based in the White House and in the executive office. It now comes at a big remove within the intelligence community itself, with Brennan, Comey, and of course Clapper, who's the director of national intelligence, at the center of it all.
Yeah, Obama was pulling the strings, course, no doubt about it.
Well that's right. And this is an example of him not just pulling the strings.
He was like the conductor in an orchestra.
Yeah, absolutely. Not just pulling the strings, but also concealing his traces. Yeah. He's always been very skilled at doing that. So he can say, look, it wasn't me. I wasn't involved. I may be brief, but, you know, I wouldn't do anything or interfere with anything. This is obviously the intelligence community people talking to each other. Of course, I passed the executive order that allowed them to do that. But that doesn't show responsibility on my part. It merely shows that they abused the authority I gave them.
Before I move on to Haspel, I wonder if Obama is going to make the sinister move and put them all out to dry, i.e. sell Clinton, Comey, Brennan, just sell them all down the river.
I wouldn't be in this.
And he can consolidate power of the neoliberal left.
I wouldn't be at all surprised. I mean, I wouldn't put that past Obama at all. Obama is a much more devious individual than all of them. That's the first thing to say. And of course, he is a far more devious individual than his public perception make people think, many people think he is. I mean, you only have to listen to the way the man speaks. I mean, he speaks, you know, when he's not delivering speeches, he speaks in riddles. It's quite interesting to watch. I mean, he's obviously a trained lawyer. He knows how to do that, but he does it to a degree that I've never seen in any other politician.
Yeah, there's always this fight, you know, who runs the Democrat machine, who's the superior, you know, family, so to speak. And now there's this tug of war between the Clinton machine and the Obama machine. Yeah. Obama, if he really wants to, and he just might, I think he has all the cards.
Yeah.
You know, he has all the cards in his pocket where he can pull them out and just absolutely demolish the Clintons.
Absolutely. He'll come in, you know, as the savior of the Democratic Party, the messiah, the person untouched by everything. He can say, you know, it was Hillary Clinton. I never really got on with Hillary Clinton. And, you know, it was she did all these bad things. And I'm the person who's going to sort out the Democratic Party and put it on the right and true path. I could very easily see him doing that. That's entirely like him. And, you know, he has this extraordinary grip on the media and on parts of the US public. I mean, I could see him getting away with it too. I mean, you people suspending their disbelief and say to themselves, well, you know, maybe this saintly figure in the White House didn't realize all the bad things that all these wicked people around him were up to. I mean, I can believe that.
Yeah, well, we have the evidence, the paper trail now that leads back to Clinton pretty much. I mean, it's there.
Exactly. Exactly right. Exactly.
So, Gina, what's her nickname? Gina or something
like that. Something like that. I mean,
something like that. She is a piece of work. But
yeah,
I mean, I don't know. Is the CIA? Does Trump appoint? Does the president appoint the CIA?
The president appoints the head of the CIA. I mean, he first appointed Mike Pompeo, and then he appointed Gina Haspel. And of now, we know, by the way, one reason I was saying, you know, we haven't had as much information from the CIA as we've had from the FBI, and we now know why, because Gina Haspel has been resisting all the declassifications, so she's preventing the American people from knowing all the things that the CIA was up to. And you're quite right. She was, of course, in London. She was, you know, the CIA. Exactly. And, you know, who else was in London at that time? Well, you know, it just happens that a man called Stefan Halper was there. Another man called Christopher Steele was there. A person called Mifsud was there. A person called, you know, Richard Dearlove was there. I mean, all of these people were there. And, you know, poor George Papadopoulos, he was also there. So all of these people were there, just as it happened that, you know, Gina Haspel was was floating around, no doubt talking to all these people too. I mean, that's, of course, if you really want to believe in coincidence, that's pure coincidence. If you don't believe in coincidence, well, it begs lots of questions. And of course, she wouldn't just have been talking to the people we've just talked about. She would have been talking to the heads of the British intelligence community, the head of GCHQ, which is Britain's equivalent of the NSA, to MI6, British Secret Service, Intelligence Service, the Secret Intelligence Service, that's his real name, by the way, MI5, Britain's Counterintelligence Organization. She would have been talking with all of these people, and she would have been talking with various important political people. She would have been talking and liaising with people in the Australian Embassy. Remember,
Alexander Downer,
the Australian High Commissioner, who turns out also has intelligence connections. And, she was there. She was right at the center of all of this, except, of course, we don't know what she was doing because it's still, classified.
I mean, it just strengthens the case that we've made for a while that the origin story of this whole Russia thing was the UK.
I mean,
maybe even a smaller area, this Cambridge, I believe it was Cambridge or Oxford.
It was Cambridge. Cambridge was
this Cambridge group of people.
Indeed. Absolutely. Well, we did a whole program about this. And in fact, there's evidence that it was a lot of this was cooked up in Cambridge. But can I just say, big question for me, given the role that Haspel may and probably did have. How did it come about that Donald Trump picked her to be CIA director? I mean, this, again, can't have been mere chance. Someone must have persuaded him to appoint her.
In order to protect all
of this information from coming out. I mean, that seems to me the logical explanation. I mean, there is no other obvious one. I mean, she was, again, hardly someone Donald Trump would have known about beforehand. I mean, he's not familiar with the inner workings of the CIA or its, top officials. Before he became president. So someone must have lobbied him to appoint Gina Haspel. Who was that person or persons? I mean, surely it was persons. Was it some people in the Senate, perhaps? Some people, in the Republican Party in the Senate who were perhaps knew more than they were saying at the time. I do ask that question.
I wonder if all the Skripal stuff, which Haspel also floated by Trump in order to get Trump to expel diplomats and to sanction Russians. I wonder if all of that Skripal stuff was just part of Haspel's spy games and just to distract and maybe buy time so that people don't get to the bottom of this Russiagate stuff. In other words, just distraction methods and buying time and just causing chaos in general in and around Trump and also in and around Russia so that they could, every move they made was just to buy a little more time so that they can get to a point where we're so close to the elections that, you can't really indict and prosecute at this moment in time because you're a month away from the elections. And they're putting all their chips, they're putting everything on the line to elect this empty suit, this Joe Biden guy who's doesn't even know where the hell he is, so that when he does get elected, that's their hope, when he does get elected, or when they steal the elections, all of this stuff can just get wiped away.
Well, this is exactly what it's all about. I mean, this is why the stakes in this election are so high. I've been saying this, by the way, for well over a year. I've been saying that, for me, and I speak as a person in Britain. I mean, I don't have a vote in the US election. Who the American people elect as their president is not ultimately my concern. But there is only one overriding reason why, in spite of his flaws, I would want Donald Trump re-elected, because I think it is essential for the safety and integrity of the American Republic, whose safety and integrity is of massive concern, to everyone in the world that all of this is exposed and all of the people involved in these plots and conspiracies and intrigues, which weren't just against the person of Donald Trump, they were against the constitutional order of the United States, that all of these people are held to account. So I think this is, for me, an absolutely essential reason why Donald Trump should be reelected in November.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Is there anything else you want to add, Alexander?
No, I mean, lots to talk about here, but I think this covers the ground. As I said, lots of heavy analysis we had to do. I mean, you know, we've had to engage in some guesswork. I mean, especially at the beginning. I mean, Radcliffe's letter begs many questions. We provided possible answers, but, you know, which we can follow up and see. What I would point out is our guesses in Russiagate have been consistently right.
Yeah.
Whenever we've suggested connections, sure enough, 6 months, a year later, the document comes out, which proves that those connections happened, that those things were true.
Yeah, so much is on the line. So much is on the line. I think all of this stuff explains really well. It really explains why they're going so hard to get Trump out at all costs.
Absolutely.
Because if Trump does win, please let him win. Then I think we really have a chance that there will be indictments and we will get to the bottom of this. If Trump doesn't win, and this Biden character and the people behind Biden, because it's not Biden, the people behind Biden, they are going to sweep all of this away.
Exactly.
All of this is going to get swept away.
Exactly.
And the Gina Haspels and the Comeys are just going to be like, we dodged a bullet.
Absolutely.
And they're going to laugh about it.
Yes. 50 years from now, when, you know, some of us won't be here, you know, the historians will, you know, burrow in and will find out all about it. But by then, the American Republic will be gone.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look at all the chaos that all of this has brought about today. Absolutely. All of the chaos we see today is all because of these guys and what they did.
Absolutely.
To Trump. All of it.
As someone once said, everything is connected.
Yeah, absolutely. All of it. Everything. Yeah. All the racist stupidity, all the dumb talking points and the narratives and the Ukraine gates and all that stuff.
It's to steer the discussion away from the really important topic, which is unfortunately a complicated one, but which has tremendous implications for the future of America.
It's all about their absolute corruption, Alexander. And it's all about that debate yesterday and the $3.5 million that went to Hunter Biden, because at the end of the day, that's probably peanuts compared to what all these guys were stealing and pillaging from the United States of America and from all these other countries all over the world. And that is the main point of this cover-up. At the end of the day, it always comes back to money. It always comes back to their and pillaging and carpet bagging. And that is why yesterday I got so pissed off, because we had an opportunity for the first time in so long to finally get Biden to answer a simple question. That $3.5 million, damn it, what was it for? Mm. What was it for? Such simple questions that need answering. And what these guys were doing was not millions. Mm. It was billions.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, I should say you're absolutely right. Whenever a scandal of this kind arises, it's always about money. It invariably is. I mean, St. Paul maybe didn't say it, but it's in one of the letters which is apocryphal or attributed to him, but perhaps didn't write about the lust for money being the root of all evil. But it's, you know, in this instance, that's true. That's exactly the truth. These kind of scandals always revolve around money.
All right. Anything else you need to?
No. Let's hear what our viewers have to say. I'm sure they've got lots to say.
Let me pull up the super chats here, Alexander. Yeah. I think you explained everything very clearly. It's a complete mess.
It's complicated. So, you know, I'm by the way hugely impressed. I should say this. How able our viewers are to keep track of all of this, because, I mean, God knows it's hard enough And I find it very hard. And, you know, I've been trained to understand these things. I mean, it used to be my job. So, I mean, I can understand, I can follow these things because I used to do this sort of thing, but that so many, that our viewers are able to follow it. I find that amazing, actually. Huge credit to them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you there. Let's start with super chats from Peter Moe's, a 25 euro super chat. Thank you very much, Peter, for that super chat. From Valies, a $20 super chat. Thank you very much, Valies. I believe Valies, you are in Ohio. What is the feeling in Ohio? Is Trump going to take it? Let us know. Let us know. I think you are in Ohio, but if Trump is going to take us, let us know in the chat. If anyone else is from Ohio, let us know. I think he's going to take that state.
I think so too. Actually.
And what do they say? Where Ohio goes, which way Ohio votes is the president. I think that's that's the saying. So let's see. Thor Lucky, 1999 super chat. You are amazing. Thank you very much, Thor. From Charlie CCC, 299 super chat. Thank you very much, Charlie CCC. From Darren Alevi, £5 super chat. The hate they have for Trump is insane. You don't have to agree with Trump to see how unfair and horrible he has been treated by the MSM hacks.
Absolutely true. I remember fairly early on in his presidency, he did an extraordinary tweet, Trump did, in which he said that no one has ever been treated as badly as he has been. And that's absolutely true. I mean, it's he was never given a chance by these people from the moment he became president. They went for him right away. One of the most interesting revelations in Byron York's recent book, he goes into great detail about how they started plotting the impeachment of Trump before Trump became president. I mean, it's quite bizarre, but they did.
Yeah, it's incredible. From Charlie CCC 499, liberals will vote for Biden, a warmonger, when Trump has been the most anti-war candidate in a century. They do not care about peace.
Absolutely well true. That's completely right. That is absolutely right. That is so completely true. And it's the single most important fact you need to understand about the politics of today's United States. Donald Trump believes, as Republicans used to believe, that the business of America is business. And his major concern is the American people. These liberal neo-globalists who are not, you know, they're basically the war party. They want to go against the principles upon which the United States was constructed. They want to disregard the wise words that great presidents like George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and Dwight Eisenhower said about the United States not wanting to go abroad to find monsters to slay. I mean, that's what they said, but these people want to do the exact opposite. They want to involve the United States in everything, and in the process, they've made a monster.
Yeah. From Odal Volmer, $5 super chat. Thank you for all you do from the USA. Missouri loves what you do. Thank you very much. Our best to everyone in Missouri. From Michelle. Michelle, how are you? Michelle Corley, Trump will win. He's the leader. We need Hillary is part of the swamp. Swamp will vote Biden. We the people will vote Trump. Let's hope so.
Let's absolutely hope so. I mean, you know, I believe that. I mean, you know, Lincoln, by the way, who is he also said in his very last inaugural address, you know, the United States should seek peace at home with itself and peace abroad with all nations. And of course, he was the person coming back to the comment we just made, heard from the viewer. That, you know, you can fool all the people, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all of them all of the time. And I think that is, I absolutely believe that is true. Certainly, I believe that is true of the United States. And I believe that more and more people in the United States are understanding the importance of this election.
Yeah, I'm looking in the live stream. This Michigan 2016 Bernie delegate is voting Trump. Michigan is a critical state. That's going to be a critical one for Trump to pick up.
Absolutely.
Let's see. From Ryan Travers, $20 super chat. Thank you for the rant. If people don't wake up now, there will be nothing to fight for, to live in, to enjoy in the future. They are coming for everyone. Agenda 21. Well said. Mm-hmm. Well said, Ryan. Mm-hmm. And another super chat from Ryan, a $15 super chat. The Smith-Mundt Act, thank you, Obama, really has hurt us all. Of course, it goes much deeper. Jekyll Island, Federal Reserve, LBJ, but I can't thank you all for all your hard work, your education. God bless.
Thank you very much for those very kind words.
Yeah, it does, yeah, Federal Reserve does go very deep, very deep. From JHW, a 20-pound super chat, Journalists for Hire, How the CIA Buys the News by Dr. Udo Ukhoft tells you all you need to know about the press. No English language copies are available. The German ebook version can still be found online.
Yeah, very important book. I haven't read it, but I've heard it's an extremely important book. I have lots of friends in Germany, and I know a little German, so maybe I should get round to getting their help to read it.
Yeah, I remember when that book came out. There was a lot of press when it came out, and then they shut it down.
I know. Paul Craig
Roberts did a lot of articles.
Absolutely,
about that book.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Germans, by the way, have a very, like we do everywhere else, a very, very, very conformist media. But they are also perhaps more skeptical about it than you find in some other places. And you hear Germans talk about, you know, the lying media. That is the sort of expression they use. And it's actually quite a, you know, commonplace expression in Germany. It's quite interesting.
Yeah. Alexandra Emergy, $20 super chat. I share your thoughts and feelings and appreciate your great work. Thank you very much, Alexandra, for that super chat. We appreciate it. From Fanites Barley, $4.99. Has the swamp peaked too early and shown its hand?
I hope so. I sincerely hope so. I mean, that's one of the things about these people. I mean, one of the things about entities like the swamp, the people we're talking about, is of course they're always very uneasy and insecure because they know perfectly well what they've done and they know what the consequences for them might be if they're ever held to account for it. And that means that they will act sometimes in reckless ways in order to try and conceal the things they have done. So it could very well be, and let's hope so, that they've overplayed their hand. They've overplayed their hand with Biden, who, as I said, is an empty suit, as Alex said. They've overplayed their hand with the protests in the US cities, which have ended up, I think everybody now accepts that's backfired completely. And of course, we'll see whether, you know, trying to pump out all this thing that Alex was talking about, you know, the racism stuff, whether that's going to work too. But, you know, I do wonder actually whether maybe they've rushed this too quickly, overplayed their hand, misplayed this with Trump, and in fact are going to provoke into existence an unstoppable force which might sweep them away.
All right, well said, Alexander. From Otna Sens, is a new member to the Durant community. Welcome, Otna Sens, to the community. Guys, if you want to join the Durant community, just click that join button right under the video, and we'd love to have you in the community as a member. From Cora Marie, $25 super chat. Please watch Civil War, the left's election night war game on Glenn TV. We're in a very dark place in the USA, and they will do anything to avoid exposing their horrific crimes that Trump is and is trying to get exposed.
I agree.
Is Glenn TV, is that Blaze? Is that connected to Blaze TV? Glenn Beck?
You probably know that better than me, but I you know, that sounds plausible to me. Anyway, well, viewer will no doubt tell us.
Yeah, and that's, they're going after Trump hard. Oh, yeah, I mean, it's incredible how hard they're going after him. From Toilet Sauce, a 10-euro super chat. Peskov says CIA working with Navalny. Has the Kremlin changed its tactics? Have they learned that it's pointless to wait for someone to cooperate if they are interested in humiliating you.
I read Peskov's comments, and I mean, what provoked them was Navalny has now finally come out and actually attributed his poisoning to Putin. Predictable enough, but what Peskov says is that he was told to do it by people he met who were CIA. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if it was true, but Peskov came across to me as uncharacteristically angry about it.
Navalny just doesn't know when to quit.
No.
Doesn't know when to quit.
It's a very foolish thing to do. And, you know, I've been in touch with opinion in Russia. Even some people who've been quite sympathetic to Navalny up to now are now becoming very skeptical about all of this.
Yeah. All right. Well, here's another super chat from Toilet Sauce on Navalny. Navalny says he will sue the Kremlin and demands the evidence be published on primetime TV. He should be careful what he wishes for, and If he was sincere, he would demand the same from the Germans.
Well, that's an actually excellent point. Well, first of all, where is he going to bring this claim? Is he going to bring it in Russia? Is he going to bring it in Germany? If he's going to bring it in Germany, then the Germans have a very sophisticated legal system. And as part of the legal system in Germany, as in every other advanced legal system, there is a duty of disclosure. And the Russians would, in that case, it seems to me, be in a very strong position to demand as part of that disclosure that the German government, the German authorities and Navalny disclose the evidence they have. Now, remember what happened when that St. Petersburg, the company that owned that St. Petersburg troll farm, did that in the US and demanded disclosure there. The US government had to drop the case. I mean, perhaps the same would happen in this case, because the one thing that's become perfectly clear is that the Germans, despite at one time saying they would, are not prepared to share this evidence with the Russians.
Yeah, good point. From David Taylor, £20 super chat. Thank you very much, David Taylor, for that super chat. And from Otnosens, RON25, is there any chance a second term President Trump appoints Rand Paul as DNI or Secretary of State?
I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it. Who knows? I mean, it wouldn't. If Donald Trump wins and if the Republicans keep the Senate and regain the House, and, you know, all of that seems possible to me, then, you know, things suddenly begin to become possible. A re-elected Donald Trump in that position would be a completely different Donald Trump, a far immeasurably stronger Donald Trump than the one that won the presidency in 2016 and was inaugurated in 2017. In 2017, the Republicans were nominally in control of the Senate, but they were hostile to him.
Yeah, that is a great point. A second-term Donald Trump without worrying about re-election and without worrying about all this other nonsense that they threw on him in the first term, I think he would wipe away so much of the swamp.
Well, this
wipe it away here.
This is why they're terrified of it. I mean, this is why they're doing everything they possibly can to prevent it happening. And let's hope they fail, because I think they will fail, by the way. But obviously, they're pulling out every stop to prevent that happening.
Yeah, I would like to see Rand Paul. I would like to see Flynn. I would like to see Tulsi Gabbard. I think Trump should put them all into his cabinet.
Absolutely. Absolutely. God help us. I'd love to see what the New York Times would say. I mean, not to mention the Guardian.
Tulsi Gabbard as Secretary of State, they would blow a gasket. Absolutely. I mean, they really would.
I mean, in Britain, the Guardian's head would explode. If it had a head, there we go. I mean, they'd be stunned. I mean, it would be actually quite funny to see.
Yeah. All right. From Brian Berner, $5 super chat. Thank you very much, Brian, for that super chat. From Traditional Values, $7 super chat. Joe Biden is the new Robert Mueller, an empty suit to cover the deep state.
You're quite right. Exactly right. By the way, again, you've got to read Byron York's book about this, because he talks a lot about the experience that Trump's lawyers had when they met Mueller and how they gradually realized that Mueller just wasn't there. I mean, he was sort of drifting away.
Incredible. Incredible. From Verum Est Prius, $1.99 super chat. Really appreciate you guys. Thank you. Thank you very much for that super chat. Julia Fried is a new member to the Duran community. Welcome, Julia. Welcome to the community. And from Cora Marie, $5 super chat. They are intending to infiltrate BLM and Antifa with real Americans and start warfare to blame Trump supporters.
Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, this is a very ominous development. I mean, these organizations running, riots in American cities. I've never known anything like that to happen before in the United States. I mean, I'm not saying the United States has not been prey to rioting before. That would obviously be nonsense. But organized political rioting happening on a national scale is something completely new, as far as I know. I've never known it to happen before. And as we discussed in the live we just did, I actually one of my major subject as when I studied history at university was American history, and I can never remember anything like this before.
Yeah, all connected to characters yeah. like Soros too. That's the yeah. that's the bizarre part about it all.
And the other oligarchs, the oligarchs yeah. in Wall Street, in the tech oligarchs, all of them.
Soros provides a lot of shade for all the other oligarchs.
He does.
Yeah, Michael Bloomberg is a perfect example.
Absolutely, lots of them. Absolutely.
Yeah, they like having Soros out in front.
Yes,
these guys.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
All right, and one final super chat from Life of Brian just came in. What do we do in the worst case scenario? Biden lockdowns, mandatory vaccines, total censorship. Whoever wins, the number of people who reject mass media totally has increased by a factor of 10.
Well, can I just say, if that happens, obviously it will be dark and bad days for the United States. But I would still say keep fighting, keep struggling. This is not a call, for violence or for people to go, on the streets and carry out, engage in violence or anything like that. But, the political struggle goes on. I mean, always in the end, things right themselves. The damage that would be done in the process would be enormous.
Yeah. If Biden wins, you continue to fight and the damage will be immeasurable. But the other part that worries me is the amount of wars that we'll see is just going to be exactly. is going to be horrific under Biden.
Which potentially could be a disaster for the United States. I mean, those wars could feed into the crisis in the United States itself. And of course, I mean, the United States has a mighty military, but it can't fight wars everywhere all the time. And more Americans, I think, will begin to become to question that. So, the wars would be a disaster. The political situation in the United States would be a disaster. You'd have a government that was corrupt because, well, we've been talking about the corruption, and weak because corrupt governments are always weak.
Yeah. And just to sign off, Alexander, I think if Biden does win, I think the Middle East is going to just go up in flames. And that scares the crap out of me. And I think even more worrying to me and the region that I'm in is the Balkans. I think Absolutely. Biden is just going to
I agree with that
to just too. Unleash hell in the Balkans.
I completely agree with that also. I absolutely agree. Because there are some people in Washington who think that the Balkans and the Caucasus are Russia's soft underbelly. And there's still even as it becomes ever more clear that it's China that's the big adversary, these people remain fixated with Russia. They still think that they can win some grand geopolitical game if they change the geometry in Russia. Disastrous mistake at many levels, but also a disaster for the people who live in these regions.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll continue to fight on. And
of course you will. Absolutely.
Even in the worst case scenarios.
Oh, we'll absolutely. Continue to fight on, guys, we'll be here.
We'll be here. And hopefully you guys will also be here, and we'll support each other. Yeah. So on that note, Alexander, any other words before we sign off?
Well, yes, I just wanted to say today, just for everybody to know, was the last day of the hearing of Julian Assange's case. I was invited to go. I wasn't able to go into the actual courtroom itself, because this is one of the strange things about this. There's the actual courtroom where the hearing is taking place. And then there's another courtroom in the same building, the Central Criminal Court in London, where various people, five people to be precise, are allowed to sit and watch a tiny screen a huge distance away, in which you can follow what's actually going on in the courtroom itself. But anyway, I was one of those five people. I felt very privileged to be there. I heard the various arguments that were going on in the court. I heard Vanessa Baritza, the judge, finalizing what was happening. And we now know that the decision will happen in the Assange's case on the 4th of January. There's an awful lot to say. I found an awful lot of things about the case which had not been clear to me up to now. I am going to say again, I am obviously not optimistic about the outcome. I think to be optimistic would be delusional, But I am not without hope either. And my overall assessment, and it was borne out by what I heard today and what I heard also from various people I spoke to, is that, in fact, the defense got far and away the better of the argument over the course of the hearing. And we shall see. We shall see how it goes.
And we'll probably do a video as well, we just will to update everyone on Assange.
We will definitely do it. But I mean, I know a lot of our viewers are interested in this case. All I would say is that, you know, whenever we've tried to do programs about Assange, the degree of suppression is extraordinary.
Yeah, it is. Unfortunately. All right. And a final super chat from Carlos Rodriguez, a $50 super chat. Thank you very much, Carlos, for that generous super chat. We appreciate it. Thank you to everybody who joined us on this live stream. Thank you to all the super chats, to all the questions, to all the feedback that you guys gave us. And we're going to sign off for tonight as well. And have a great evening, have a great morning, a great afternoon, wherever you are in the world.